Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We all know that children who are dealing with the effects of malnutrition and hunger, they're not going to do well in school. It's difficult, even impossible, for a child to learn if their stomachs are empty. School nutrition programs are a significant part of the mission to provide education. So how is that working? How have things changed over the years? Could cutbacks to SNAP benefits also impact school lunch programs? We invite you to call into our conversation this afternoon as we talk about school nutrition. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email questions and comments to the source at tpr.org, and you can also tweet at us on Twitter. And we're joined now with Crystal Fitzsimons. He leads the work on child nutrition programs in schools for the Food Research and Action Center. Crystal Fitzsimons, welcome to The Source.
Hi, David. Thank you so much for having me on the show this afternoon.
That's going to be a great conversation. Also with us is Diane Pratt-Hevener, Director of Media Relations for the School Nutrition Association. Diane?
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. And Brittany Krems here, the Director of Nutrition and Program Development at the Fitness Institute of Texas in the Department of Kinesiology and Health Education at the University of Texas at Austin. Brittany, hi. Welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I really want to hear from all of you on this first question about how important do you see school nutrition for the learning of a child, being able to learn, getting them ready to learn, and what concerns do you have about, well, you know, how can we do a better job at that? So let me start off with Crystal.
Hi, thanks, David. Well, I mean, I think that school breakfast and school lunch are critical education supports, and they help to ensure that kids are not sitting in classrooms hungry, so they're able to focus, learn, and concentrate. So it's in the best interest of all of us to make sure that we're providing nutritious and appealing meals that kids want to eat to help combat hunger, improve health, and support academic achievement.
And Diane Pratt-Hevener, how important do you see this? Where would you put it on a scale?
Oh, I definitely echo that sentiment. School meals are so critical, not only to, you know, kids' ability to focus and on the studies and in the classroom, but to their overall health and well-being. And particularly now that school meals meet updated nutrition standards, there's research showing that they're healthier than ever before. We really want to make sure that all students have access to these meals that contribute to academic success.
Brittany Krim, where do you see the importance of school nutrition for learning?
Well, I mean, nutrition is so vital for children and their cognition and development. We have ample evidence that shows not just their ability to retain and understand information they're being taught, but also just their emotional performance in terms of their ability to control their emotions, their ability to focus, et cetera. If they're not well-nourished, they're not going to be successful.
Yeah, so Brittany, to that point, I mean, looking at the physicalness of the child, and if the brain takes a lot of calories, right?
Absolutely. And it doesn't just take calories. It takes the appropriate types of nutrients. So getting adequate fats and good fats and getting adequate protein and all that kind of stuff, hydration, all of that contributes to their ability to focus and retain information.
Crystal Fitzsimons, as you work on child nutrition programs in schools, how do we make sure that schools are on top of this, looking at this in an appropriate way?
Well, schools are following the nutrition standards that are required for school breakfast and school lunch. So as Diane mentioned earlier, the nutrition is actually just getting better and better in school meals. I would say that we have some work to do around increasing participation in the school breakfast program because we serve nationally about half the low-income kids who participate in school lunch. Texas is doing a better job, and you guys are actually ranked 10th nationally for reaching low-income kids with breakfast who participate in lunch. But there's still more work that we could be doing to make sure that more kids in Texas are able to start the school day with a healthy, nutritious school breakfast.
And Diane, can you talk about the oversight? I mean, schools have to provide nutritious meals at a certain level. It's a requirement if they want to have a reimbursement from the federal government. So a level of oversight is part of the program, right?
Yes, there. In fact, school meal programs are very heavily regulated, not only for nutrition standards, but for procurement and professional standards for the folks who work in school cafeterias. But in terms of the nutrition standards, these meals are very healthy meals that not only are offering students healthy options, low-fat milk, fruit, vegetables, a protein, and a grain is offered with every school lunch. And the meal as a whole has to meet age-appropriate calorie limits, limits on unhealthy fat, and initial reduced sodium limits as well. So schools work very hard to meet those standards and to really try and get kids to eat those healthy options being offered. We're seeing a lot of work in school cafeterias, particularly in Texas, of trying to encourage students through farm-to-school programs, harvest of the month programs where they introduce students to new fruits and vegetables and nudge them, encourage them to give those items a try.
Right, but Brittany Krim, as a student, a young kid, you know, you've gone halfway through your school day and now you get a break, you get to go to the cafeteria, and how many choices do you actually have, and how do you prevent kids from just piling on a big plate of French fries and actually going for things that are going to feed the brain?
So they actually have to be offered multiple choices, and even if they're getting French fries from their school lunch program, they're not going to be your traditional, like, Whataburger fries or whatever fast food place you're thinking of. They are baked. They are potato-based. They are not, like, a potato alternative, if you will. So they're still getting good food, even if they're not going for, say, a salad. They're getting offered a good protein source, a good whole grain. Half of the grains have to be whole grains. They're getting offered good milk. Like she said, it has to be a low-fat milk option. So the offerings are acceptable even if they are not choosing some of what you would think of as your more nutritional things like cucumbers and salad. So they're still getting access to very essential nutrients that they need, and whatever choices they're making, they're being prepared in the most healthful way possible.
And Brittany, how do we do that in a way that, I mean, we nudge kids to learn healthy eating habits, so hopefully it will stick with them for life, in a way that it is positive and not, like, you know, fat shaming or any kind of shaming?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is just the general exposure to healthy foods changes a child's perspective on what they should be eating. And they take that information home with them and they share it with their parents. And so we have lots of research out there that has looked at if we offer this multiple times, will the child choose it? Will the child like it? And the more we offer it, the more likely they are to adapt it as part of a healthy lifestyle and take that information home and tell their parents, like, hey, I was exposed to quinoa at school. Let me try that as something that we get at the dinner table, or I want to have green beans as a part of my balanced meal. So they really do understand what we're showing them and what we're exposing them to, and they really do take that message with them to establish lifelong habits.
Now, poverty is a serious concern. Here in San Antonio, it's been rated as the top poverty city, statistical area in the nation. And so is school lunches and school breakfast and even after school food programs, is this a way to help deal with or even eradicate poverty-related hunger and undernutrition, Crystal?
Absolutely. Providing a nutritious school breakfast and school lunch to kids at school, you're making sure that kids have nutrition, but you're also easing the household financial budget so that families can spread out the resources that they have. So it's a win-win, really. Kids that have the nutrition that they need to be at school and focus and concentrate, and then families, the burden is a little bit lighter since they do not have to provide that breakfast and lunch. And as you mentioned, after-school meals are a wonderful resource for schools as well to make sure that kids get a nutritious after-school meal. And then it also has been shown to help draw kids into educational enrichment after-school programs, which keep them out of trouble, keep them safe, and then also keep them learning and support their academic achievement. So it's really a win-win.
Diane Pratt-Hevener with the School Nutrition Association. I understand you have a national survey that kind of looks at school nutrition issues. What did y'all find?
Yes, we survey our members who work in school cafeterias across the country every year. And each year we find out just how much work is being done, not only to improve the quality and nutrition of the meals being served in cafeterias, but to try and boost consumption of healthy choices. Over the years, we've found that schools are really using taste tests with students quite regularly, offering a little sample of a new fruit or vegetable for free. Can sometimes encourage kids to try that first taste, and then they might be more willing to take up a full serving when they go through the cafeteria. Our most recent survey found that schools are really doing a lot to try and build off of some of the popular restaurant trends to get kids to try cafeteria meals.
Give me an example. What would be good?
Like made-to-order meals. So many schools now are offering Asian noodle bars or, you know, build-your-own yogurt parfait bars at breakfast, to really allow students to customize the meal, take those healthy choices, and, you know, build a meal that's more appealing for them. So we're seeing a lot of kind of creative menu trends in the cafeteria just to try and appeal to students and bring them back to the cafeteria. The more that we can have most of the students in the school participating in the lunch program, that reduces any potential stigma for those kids who really rely on meals as a primary source of nutrition.
We go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Violetta is on the line. Violetta, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. My question will be, I have two kids in pre-kindergarten and kindergarten, and one time I tried to research a little bit about the breakfast, which was most of the time just cereal. I know it's with a less sugar than the commercial ones, but still, it's just, you know, I'm thinking about more protein during the morning, and they told me that, you know, it was regulations and that it was hard to change. So I was just wondering if you have a plan for that, because I think it's really important, protein in the morning for the little kids.
Okay, Violetta, thank you for that. So Diane Pratt-Hevener, she says that they got mostly cereal, commercial cereal. She thought that protein would be better, but she was told that was not in the guidelines.
Well, so schools are required to offer a grain with every breakfast, and they have an option of serving protein as well, but they have to serve a grain. So I think that's part of what the director was referring to in regards to the regulations. Many schools are offering protein a day or two a week and trying to bring more protein onto school breakfast menus. And we certainly encourage families and students to keep open those lines of communication with the school nutrition team to, you know, ask for any changes to the menu or, encourage those changes. But they do have to offer some sort of grain at breakfast every day.
I know that the dairy milk, traditional milk, is big in school breakfast and school lunch. Is there room for, you know, dairy alternatives like almond milk or soy milk, Diane?
Yes. So milk is required to be offered with every breakfast and lunch, and schools also have to make drinking water available in the cafeteria either through a water fountain or pitchers of water. So schools really are encouraging students to choose water as well. In terms of milk alternatives, schools are required to offer a dairy alternative to students who have a doctor's note you know, requiring it. And many schools do also offer, you know, for sale, lactose-free milk or almond or soy milk as well. But that's not part of the reimbursable meal, you know, the meal, standard meal.
Wow. And Diane, like, how many students would a typical school have to feed on a given day? I mean, it's going to be a big operation.
Well, yes. And in fact, you know, we sometimes talk about the school meal program being the biggest restaurant in town, because quite often, you know, depending on school enrollment, it is a really big operation. And that can be, you know, a challenge for many of the schools. I know some parents have concerns about early start times or late start times for lunch. And that sometimes is the product of, you know, having to move 900 students through the cafeteria in one day. But the school cafeteria staff does everything they can to, you know, serve all of these students in quick succession.
Right, while still meeting the criteria that's been put down for them to follow. We're going to take a quick break. Do your kids eat lunch or breakfast meals at your school? How's the quality? Do you know what your kids are even eating every day at school? Do they have access to vending machines? What would you like to see happen at your school's cafeteria? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Every day, every weekday, thousands of kids here in San Antonio line up at the school cafeteria, and they get their tray filled with meals, yummy meals, nutritious meals. It's going to impact how they learn, and this could set a pattern of eating behavior for life. And we want to make sure that they are developing, you know, good habits. But is that always the case, and what are the challenges in that area? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980 for you to join a conversation like Tony did here. And Tony, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Hi, Tony. You there?
Oh, hey. I'm sorry. Yeah, I have a couple of questions for your guest. Will your guest define the difference between organic foods and non-organic foods? And the second question is, do they think that organic meals will ever be introduced to our youngsters in public schools? Thank you.
Tony, thank you for that question. Let me go first to Crystal Fitzsimons, who works for the Child Nutrition Program in Schools and the Food Research and Action Center. So organic foods, is that something that is part of this concern?
Well, so what I would say is, you know, schools are reimbursed for each meal that they're served at the free, reduced price, or paid rate. And so there are some cost constraints there. So schools are serving fruits and vegetables, they're serving milk, they're serving whole grains. A lot of schools are not serving organic food. I think that SNA might be able to talk about this issue a little bit more. But there are some cost constraints around the meals that are being served. And so I think school nutrition directors are working very hard to really develop the most nutritious and most appealing meals possible within the budget constraints that they face.
All right, let me go over to Diane Pratt-Havener with the School Nutrition Association. And I do want to say that organic foods really have not shown to be more nutritious than non-organic foods. And so, I mean, that's an organic food marketing, of course, is very significant, but is it really that much better than other food? That's not really been determined. And Diane?
Yes, and I will echo what Crystal said. When you look at what schools have to provide for lunch, they get about $3.50 back for every meal that they serve to a student eligible for a free meal. And that $350 has to cover not only the food, but the labor, benefits, equipment, utilities, all the costs that go into preparing that meal. Schools do an excellent job of stretching that very tight budget to cover the milk, the fruit, the vegetables, the protein, and the grain that goes on the tray. But there are limitations in, you know, at that price point. But schools work very hard to make sure that they're offering nutritious choices, again, lots of fruits and vegetables, and we've seen tremendous progress in terms of local sourcing. And that's really, you know, exciting to see that students are getting locally grown foods in so many of their school cafeterias.
All right, let's go to another caller, 210-614-8980, for you to join our conversation as we talk about school nutrition. And Margaret, welcome to The Source. Margaret, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm interested in what the barriers are to students having the breakfasts and what is being done to alleviate these barriers.
All right, Margaret, thank you for that great question. Crystal Fitzsimons with the Food Research and Action Center.
Sure. So there are a number of barriers that can limit access to school breakfast, but I would say the biggest one is that a lot of schools actually serve breakfast in the cafeteria before the school day starts. And so a lot of kids are actually not even physically present at the school when breakfast is being served, or some kids may be outside playing on the playground and not want to come into the cafeteria. So a lot of schools are having success with by making breakfast a part of the school day, by doing breakfast in the classroom. San Antonio actually does breakfast after the bell in a lot of their schools, and they have pretty high participation in the school breakfast program. But really thinking about how to provide breakfast after the school day starts so that kids are present and are able to participate. And I would say one of the other great ways to ensure access to school breakfast, and this is something that Texas is doing a really good job of taking advantage of, is community eligibility, which allows high-need schools to offer free breakfast and lunch to all students. So you eliminate any stigma with participation, any barriers around cost, and you're able to provide free breakfast and lunch to all students and offer it in that way, and that really does help increase participation. So if you combine breakfast after the bell with community eligibility, you can really see breakfast participation and even lunch participation go up quite a bit.
And we've always heard this, that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. I don't think that's a scientific proven fact, but we certainly have been drilled into our heads. Brittany Krim with the Fitness Institute of Texas, can you talk about, you know, how important it is that kids do get a good breakfast to learn that day?
Absolutely. So, I mean, breakfast is not just the most important meal of the day for their attention and awareness, but also for their metabolisms and general health. When we go to sleep, our bodies change its hormonal profile, and actually having breakfast changes that back to being in awake mode. So it starts your metabolism, it gets you going, it helps to provide the energy you need to be focused and attentive while in class and not feeling like you just need to put your head on the desk.
Now, we're seeing some headlines about changes to the SNAP program that's being administered by the Trump administration. These changes won't go into effect until April 2020, and they still could face court battles and maybe even some legislation. But Crystal Fitzsimons, as you look at this from the Food Research and Action Center, what are your concerns?
So we are very concerned with some of the proposed rules that have come out of the U.S. Department of Agriculture around SNAP, also known as food stamps, because we know that that program is the first line of defense for millions of families across the country. So the most recent finalized rule that came out was around they're expecting that it would limit access to about 700,000 nearly 700,000 people. So that would have a huge impact on the resources that families have in order to purchase food. Another concern is that there was a recent bill or recent proposed rule, which has not been finalized yet, called the Broad-Based Categorical Eligibility Rule, and it would have a pretty dramatic impact on Texas. Mathematica estimates that about 15% of SNAP households in Texas would lose their eligibility. And because families who participate in SNAP are automatically eligible for free school meals, we would expect an increase in the number of kids who are not being linked up to free school meals. We would expect an increase in unpaid school meal debt. We would also expect it to be harder for schools that are operating community eligibility, as so many schools in Texas do, to be able to operate under and under community eligibility and offer free meals to all students. So we think it could have a huge impact on hunger and health for kids both at school and at home.
Diane Pratt-Hevener with the School Nutrition Association. What are your concerns about changes to the SNAP program and how that could reverberate in schools?
Yes, we share those concerns, particularly about the rule around categorical eligibility. Direct certification, which is the automatic eligibility for free school meals for SNAP-enrolled families, has been a wonderful addition to school meal programs over the last however many years. There is a very real barrier to free and reduced price meals through the application process. Schools are required to send out applications to all families and to try and enroll eligible families in the process, but it is not an easy process. The application is very detailed. You have to provide a lot of personal information, and certainly for immigrant families who may be concerned, given the current climate, there is a lot of hesitation among eligible families for completing and submitting that application. And certainly families where, you know, both parents may be working multiple jobs, finding time to go through this application process is also a barrier. So we are very concerned about, you know, any change that is going to bump students out of the free and reduced price program and the impact that will have on those kids and their ability to get nutritious meals at school.
Crystal Fitzsimons, you mentioned the problems with school lunch debt. Why is that a thing?
Well, for the schools that are operating under community eligibility where they're offering free breakfast and lunch to all students, it's not a thing. The way the National School Lunch Program operates normally is that they would provide free meals to the kids who are certified for free meals, reduced price meals for kids who are certified for reduced price meals, and that means the school district can charge up to 30 cents for breakfast and up to 40 cents for lunch. And then if you're not eligible for free or reduced price meals, then the district charges you the majority cost of the meal. And so, you know, sometimes families, when they are not certified for free school meals, if they're eligible, if they're struggling to make ends meet, sometimes they can fall behind in their school meal payments, or busy parents, you know, can lose track of it. And so, you know, that is a financial hardship for schools. And so we do not want to see anything like these proposed SNAP rules that could exacerbate the issue even more. So
we see news stories every once in a while about a kid who's fallen behind and maybe something bad happens to him in school. Are there some recommended steps to have to deal, you know, how do you administer that type of thing? I'm really short on time, but I mean, there's got to be a better way of dealing with a child who has fallen behind on their school meal debt than shaming them or prohibiting them from having food on any given day. But we're going to take a break, and we're going to come right back. We're going to get some more calls. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about school nutrition and how important it is for kids to learn in the classroom. And let's go back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with Chris. Chris, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thank you all so much for talking about this topic. As a former teacher and now a pediatric therapist, I recognize how important it is for kiddos to eat. And on that light, what I noticed when I was teaching is kids frequently would bring snacks into the classroom, which typically was prohibited, but the snacks they were bringing were your hot Cheetos and, you know, other processed foods. And our college decided to start providing, you know, fruit like apples and bananas, oranges, whatever, in the classroom. And it made a substantial difference where kids weren't constantly thinking about when is lunch, what can I eat, I can't focus. And I was curious, are any school districts in the state doing that? Are they providing healthy snacks inside the classroom where it's not a huge disruption, but maybe they develop a healthier course of nutrition and nutritionary habits?
All right. Let me go first to Crystal Fitzsimons on that thought line.
Sure. So there are a number of schools who are doing that. We actually have a really wonderful fresh fruit and vegetable program that's funded out of USDA that high-need schools can apply for and get grants to provide fruits and vegetables to students. And you're absolutely right. It introduces kids to healthier food. It also, you know, substitutes in some of the unhealthier food that kids might have brought from home. And it's a great way to introduce kids to fresh fruits and vegetables that they may not have eaten at home. But that is, it's a nice federal program that's not available to every school across the country, but it is available to lots of schools, and they can apply for funding to the Texas Department of Agriculture for it.
And Brittany Krim with the Fitness Institute of Texas, when you're a kid and you're in a classroom, and especially if you're doing school athletics, I mean, I remember just being hungry all the time. It just seems like you just can't get enough calories, and even if you are eating three meals a day, that may not even be enough, right?
Absolutely. I mean, having snacks available to the children would be ideal nationwide. I mean, not just for the high-risk schools, but for everybody. And, you know, being able to allow children to eat when hungry is really a critical thing in helping them to understand their own fullness and hunger cues. And so when we make them wait, you know, 4 hours to eat, all they can think about is food. They're not thinking about what they're doing and what they're learning. And if they were able to be like, oh, I'm hungry, I feed, and now I'm not hungry and I can focus, that would be ideal.
And Brittany, also, can you help me understand a little bit between the link between hunger and obesity? As far as I understand it, that sometimes you, when you're hungry all the time, when you do get to eat, you load up typically on some of the wrong things that could encourage obesity and diabetes.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you're going to go straight for the heavy carb, heavy sugar, higher fat items just because they're the most palatable. And if you enter a meal overly hungry, you are significantly more likely to overconsume and to eat at a much faster rate. Not to mention, our schools have such a limited time period for lunch. Most of the kids are trying to just get everything in as fast as they can so that they have the ability to eat their entire lunch. That really doesn't help in teaching those hunger and fullness cues, which then can translate into overconsuming on a regular basis, which absolutely increases the likelihood of obesity.
Diane Pratt-Hevener, there's been some criticism being raised about how schools will use food, like pizza parties for books read, number of book or behavior, or other things, accomplishments. Is that becoming reevaluated?
Yeah, that's a real concern. You know, schools not only are meeting updated nutrition standards for the meals, but they have also done an overhaul on any snack items that are for sale. So anything sold in an a la carte line or sold in a school store snack bar now meets nutrition standards to ensure that there are healthy items. But all of that effort kind of goes out the window if the student walks into the cafeteria or into the classroom and gets a cupcake for a birthday party. So, you know, we really encourage schools and families to, you know, keep that in mind and try and, you know, move toward healthier options for any class events or rewards.
And so we got an email from Dana. With hunger, different rates of childhood obesity and diabetes and pre-diabetes, we need to take a serious action to get sugar out of our schools, I guess particularly those sugary drinks. I moved my kids out of public schools because of the excessive sugar in the environment. Crystal Fitzsimons, how do we deal with sugar in schools?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, I think it's important to remember that there are nutrition standards for the breakfasts and lunches that are being served in school. And there's lots of research that says that the meals that are being served by the school are actually healthier than what kids are likely to bring home from school. Pack in a lunch and bring into school. So I think that's important to remember. The other thing I would highlight is that schools are required to have a local school wellness council. And if parents want to get engaged in what's happening in the classroom and in the school around nutrition, that is a great way to get engaged and get into the conversation. Because a lot of the decisions that are made are being made at the local level. So, you know, there's federal standards that all schools are following. But as Diane mentioned, there have been a lot of limitations and more nutrition focus on the foods that are being served outside of the school lunch program. But we could all be doing better. And if parents want to engage on the issue, they should really engage with their school district and get to be part of the conversation.
Also got an email from Sally about gardens at our schools and how they can grow some food for the classroom. Is this something that, I mean, we may see anecdotally, but how widespread actually is this happening? Diane Pratt-Hevner?
Yes, we're excited that one of our surveys found that about 34% of school districts reported having school gardens. And, you know, in many schools, they're used primarily as a teaching tool, both for, you know, science lessons, and they even work in math. But it's also a great way to teach kids about how their food is grown, maybe give them a small taste of some of the fruits and vegetables that they might encounter in the school lunchroom.
Yeah, they can actually see where food comes from.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, even those schools that aren't using school gardens may be involved in a farm-to-school program. We're seeing schools get really creative partnering with some of the local farmers that are supplying the cafeteria, doing, you know, information events with the students.
So Brittany Krim with the University of Texas at Austin, Department of Kinesiology, Fitness Institute of Texas. Tell me, what would you like to see happen? What's your big wish here?
I would like to see that there's continually providing nutrition for everyone who needs it. And, I mean, ideally for anyone without limitation, if we could put that in a perfect world, right, and having fresh fruits and vegetables in the classroom available for snacking and having access to nutritious breakfast and lunch in the classroom for breakfast, like she said, to help get everybody on board, and at lunchtime without any stigmatization and being able to show kids, you know, this is what nutritious food is, and exposing them to it at no cost. That would be a perfect situation. But obviously budget constraints and things like that come into play. That's where more of your local involvement and the farm-to-market programs and things like that really help with supporting these types of programs.
And Brittany, it seems to me, though, I mean, when I was a kid, there was this firewall between what happened in the cafeteria and what happened in the classroom. Should there be more information going back and forth?
You mean like to the teachers?
Well, to the students. Like, I had no idea, you know, what was going on, where that food came from, and how nutritious it might be, or what I should be learning about that food.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we could even get to a point where children had some hand in the preparation of the food, you know, that's one of the things I teach a lot of parents that come to me asking to help improve the nutrition of their children, especially picky eaters, is have them get involved, have them be part of the menu selection, have them be involved in prepping the ingredients and how the food is being prepared and that kind of stuff, because the more they know about what the food is coming from, the more likely they are to eat it. So absolutely, if we could get them involved more and get more education to the students about where is your food coming from, how is it being prepared, and what the options are, I think you would see more favorable choices being made.
Diane Pratt-Hevener, School Nutrition Association, what's your big wish?
Oh, if Congress would provide school breakfast and lunch at no charge to all students as part of their education. You know, we all are in agreement that students need healthy meals to be able to, you know, succeed in the classroom. So it should be provided just like teachers and textbooks.
And Crystal Fitzsimons, what would you like to see change? What's your big wish?
Oh, well, that what Diane just identified is my big wish. I would love to see breakfast and lunch offered for free to all students in every school across the country.
And, I mean, so why isn't that happening, Crystal? I mean, is there a pushback from some parts of the marketplace?
Well, so we actually are moving towards in that direction. So, you know, we have about 95,000 schools across the country who participate in the National School Lunch Program. And at this point, we have about 28,600 schools who are offering free breakfast and lunch to all students under community eligibility. So we are moving in that direction. In Texas, there's about 2,700 schools that are offering free breakfast and lunch under community eligibility. So I think, you know, Congress is thinking about reauthorizing the child nutrition programs, and I think there are ways to bolster community eligibility so that more schools are able to implement it, and that it would be great to be moving on this continuum to get more schools offering free breakfast and lunch to all students.
Yeah, and how about the people behind the line? Are they getting paid enough, Crystal?
You know, I think that varies quite a bit based on what local, you know, what local requirements there are.
But that needs to be part of the equation, too, I think. Crystal Fitzsimon, she works with the Child Nutrition Program in schools at Food Research and Action Center. Diane Pratt-Hevener, thank you so much. School Nutrition Association, Brittany Krim, Fitness Institute of Texas. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.